Hello and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Abdul El-Sayed's campaign for governor could hit a major roadblock. That's according to a report this week in Bridge Magazine. The Michigan Constitution says in order to be governor, you must be a registered voter in the state for 4 consecutive years preceding the election. Here's Bridge Magazine reporter Joel Kurth outlining the possible issue for the Democrats' campaign.
El-Sayed has been a registered voter in Michigan since 2003. The issue is that when he moved to New York to teach at Columbia, he registered to vote in 2012 and was considered a registered voter in New York until 2015 at the very least. And he also re-registered to vote in Michigan in 2016. So the question then becomes, was he a qualified to vote in 2015, and a lot of election law experts say that that could trip him up.
Now, this story has caused quite a stir this week. Abdul El-Sayed joins us now to answer questions about his eligibility and also discuss the policy agenda his campaign released this week that focuses on Michigan's cities. Dr. El-Sayed, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the Secretary of State has confirmed that you've been continuously registered to vote in Michigan since 2003. So it seems like the legal issue is whether you're registering to vote in New York, whether where you were registered as late as March of 2015, according to Bridge Magazine, might not satisfy the requirement in the state constitution, which says you must be, air quotes here, a registered elector in this state for 4 years before the general election. Were you, in effect, registered to vote in 2 states for a period of time over the last 4 years?
We're 100% confident that I'm eligible to run for governor and to serve as governor of the state. I left to go to medical school. Like many folks from our state who took advantage of great public schools, I had the opportunity to represent Michigan as a Rhodes Scholar in Oxford. I then finished medical school at Columbia University, and while my wife was finishing med school, I was served as a professor there. I never once lost my registration to vote. I never once left my residence in Michigan other than intact, with the intention of coming home and leveraging those skills that I had earned abroad and in New York to serve my state. And I got that opportunity when I was appointed Commissioner of Health in the city of Detroit, had the opportunity to serve my hometown, and now hoping to serve as governor. We know that I'm eligible. I've been continuously registered to vote since I was 18 years old and registered to vote for John Kerry, and continuously having a residence here in Michigan. So this question of my eligibility shouldn't bother folks. I mean, at the end of the day, we know I'm eligible. This is unfortunately a political smear that I think is very consistent with what we've seen. I mean, I watched Barack Hussein Obama run for president, and you know, this is very similar to the kinds of attacks that he got. I really want to focus on the issues here, and I know Michiganders are sick and tired of backroom politics and politicking. They want somebody who's focused on solutions to the challenges that they face, and that's what we offer.
But as you say that, could this be seen as a legitimate concern for the Democratic Party, especially considering that former State Treasurer Bob Bowman found himself in a very similar situation in 2010, and it caused him to decide not to run for governor? It had nothing to do with religion or race or anything beyond pure political necessity.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the worst case scenario for Democrats is that we watch as insiders kneecap the best possible candidate for office, the only candidate who's exciting people around the state and having conversations about real rigorous policy. And then we have substandard candidate who then carries our flag and loses yet again. I worry a lot about a certain feeling of playing not to lose among Democrats, and rather than embracing the opportunity to win. And so our focus is entirely on the conversations that we're sharing with people in the state of Michigan. I know I'm eligible. I'm a son of Michigan, born and raised here, came back here to raise my daughter and to serve my state. And, you know, I think Michiganders know better than to focus on these political smears and backroom politics, and instead to focus on issues, ideals, and ideas.
And you're not worried about any potential court challenge?
I'm not. You know, the only way that that somebody would take this to court is if they felt that their strengths of their ideas or their ideals didn't match up to ours. And I know that the democratic process is the right process for us. We owe it to people to allow them to choose their representatives at the ballot box. And the only circumstance where somebody would want to short circuit that process is if they knew that they couldn't beat us on the strength of their ideas with voters.
All right, let's shift gears to policy. Earlier this week, your campaign rolled out a 36-page plan to improve Michigan cities. It has policy recommendations on a myriad of topics, from public transit, affordable housing and economic development, to criminal justice reform, workforce development, repealing the emergency manager law. What's behind and drives your focus on cities?
Let me tell you, I had the opportunity to rebuild Detroit's health department when I was commissioner of health there. It had been shut down when our city was facing bankruptcy and emergency management. 185-year-old department shut down. And my job was to rebuild it. And in that context, I drew a lot of inspiration from a little boy whom I got to meet on my third week of work. He was the fourth child of a 21-year-old mom. He's 3 years old. Met his father maybe four times in his life because his dad's in jail. And you think about that boy's life. He lives in a city where 93% of the housing stock was built before 1978, literally has lead in the walls. And if his mom rents, which in this case she did, she's at the mercy of landlords who have benefited from laws that have put them ahead of the people who live in those communities. If she owns a home, the probability of being foreclosed upon is 36%, one in three homes. You think about the fact that the school district he goes to school in or will go to school in is not the kind of place that's really going to benefit a child. He's going to a school where his teachers have suffered pay cuts every year for the past 5 years. That, you know, when I inspected city schools, saw things like mice dead in the corner and first graders wearing their coats until 11 a.m. You think about the air he breathes. Large corporations have had their way with Detroit's air for a very long time. We were the first to stand up against them. You think about the water that he may or may not have access to in a city where 18,000 homes have their water shut off. You think about the fact that there's no access to mass transit. And despite the fact that Detroit is the motor city, only about 75% have access to a car. 25% don't have access to a car. And that's because auto insurance is just so high, and it's particularly high in cities like Detroit. And so our goal was to think systematically about the set of obstacles that a child like him has. At the end of the day, we as a state can embrace our cities. We can see them as places that can be the engines of growth for our economy. But that's going to take empowering people to be a part of that.
How can state government better serve Michigan cities?
Well, I think it has to be about getting out of the way where Michigan government has hobbled city governments for a very long time, taking of their revenue, imposing things like emergency managers who are empowered only to think about finances rather than operations. And then it's about being able to empower folks in municipalities where that's necessary. Things like being able to give folks access to relief from mortgage foreclosure to make sure that we're not breaking our constitution and assessing homes at over 50% the value of the home just for taxes annually. Mm-hmm. It's about being able to invest in things like mass transit for our cities and for communities across the state. And it's about being able to think about criminal justice reform that in ways that really does allow us to police with communities rather than police upon communities, and to empower folks to have access to high-quality jobs coming out by investing in educational opportunities for children and adults.
Just suffice it to say, we don't have time to get into all these proposals. What one policy proposal in all of this exemplifies what it would mean to have you as governor of Michigan?
The policy proposal that is the most important, I think, of all of this has to come down to revenue sharing. Right now, as a state, people like Rick Snyder, who is a CPA, has sought to balance books for the state by taking away the revenue that municipalities ought to have to be able to provide the services they uniquely can provide. This is about repealing emergency management and empowering local communities by sharing the riches so that those communities can do the things they need to do. And for me, as a former health director, somebody who was fully enthralled in the work of providing basic services for communities in Detroit, I know how important those services are. And so if we can equip communities with the means of being able to thrive and remove state government in the circumstances where it's getting in the way, I really think we can empower our cities. And just to note, it's not only about cities. We've got a rural agenda coming out quite soon, but it's about really taking what we've connected across communities that we've visited and saying, this is how the state has to rethink how it empowers people and gets out of the way where it doesn't need to be in the way.
Some of these proposals, reinvesting in water infrastructure or funding for public transit or creating what you call a living standard of water, which you define as the amount of water needed to drink, bathe, cook, and clean by a family of four, they would be provided free of charge. And some of these policies would require considerable funding or changes to existing state laws. How do you bridge the gap between a campaign promise to bring it to be reality?
Well, I think the most important thing that the future leader of the state of Michigan can do is help to set an agenda, to build the kind of space where we're having a conversation that's true to the kinds of things that people are talking about at their dinner tables that are keeping them up at night. We've traveled to over 100 different cities, 45 different counties. We're sharing those conversations with communities, and we're reflecting them in real policy. These are not things that people are not talking about. They're just not things that people have had reflected in their politics. Our job is to bring them out into the political conversation and then to translate them into government policy. You know, I just had a little girl. She's 8 weeks old now. And I think about the world that she's going to inhabit and what she deserves in that world. And I know that we're not nearly where we need to be. And then I compare her life to the life of that little boy I talked to you about. And I know that we've got a long way to go in a society founded on a set of ideals that says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. We've got a lot more work to do, and we're only going to be able to do that when we're able to empower all of us to be a part of the conversation and reflect that in policy that truly can make people's lives better.
Dr. Abdul El Sayed, thank you so much for spending time with us on Stateside.
Oh, I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
We followed up with Dr. El Sayed's campaign, and we confirmed he was registered to vote both in Michigan and New York during the last 4 years. Today, campaign spokesman Adam Joseph told us they consulted Robert Lenhard, an attorney and the former chairman of the Federal Elections Commission. Lenhard told the campaign, quoting, "Michigan law has never held that absences from the state for school or work cause you to lose your residence. This issue is just a red herring."